every tree to stabilize the climate and our children's future. America's youth have begun climbing into the timber barrens trees to guard them with their lives. They hold the moral high ground, and they need our support. Clearcutters are destroying California's forests and the hopes of future generations. The Board of Forestry wasn't listening. Are you?
So I started climbing. I was taught by a friend named America, and she taught me how to climb, and then there was the Strawberry Rock Festival, and they had this tripod,
Okay, we'll talk about what life like is in a tree. What is it up? How do you get up there?
Well, we climb using prussics and harnesses and a rope. And I don't know.
Do you like to help her describe it? Or do you want, and then we'll go back to how it was for you.
This is Cheyenne Sun Thunder, and my first time in the trees was after Mahia was already in the trees for a while. So, and then I went out there with my dad, and I was doing an independent study from school, and I wanted to get up in the trees, so we went out, we took the hike out there, and I got up in the tree. It's a really long climb for me, actually, because it was my first time, and it was pretty nerve-wracking looking down every time, but you get used to it after, like, the first five or six times you climb, you get used to going up, and you get used to the height, but when you're up there, it's like a really beautiful view. Where I was the first time was a giant sky net. It's like a hammock in between all the branches. And where I was, I could see the ocean, and I could see Strawberry Rock, and I could see it was about 130 feet. And it's an amazing view up there. And then you can go up higher than the sky net all the way to near where you can get your arms all the way around the redwoods. It's really beautiful up there. And the second time I went, they took that platform down because it was unstable and it was hurting the tree. So there was another platform across, and then there's a traverse in between these two trees. And then on the other tree, there was a platform, and it's a platform that goes all the way around the tree. And that's where mainly everything is. There's like the camp stove or the stove there, and there's the bathroom platform below that, so you have to go down on the rope to get to the bathroom platform a couple feet. And then there's storage buckets with food hanging down from the platforms with P-cord. And we get a lot of donations from people walking the trail up to Strawberry Rock. We get a lot of people come by with food and bags of like bread and bananas and stuff, and we survive. And then on the original tree that I was in with the Skynet but is now gone, there was another platform with it's like a small solar
75 watt
platform that you had to traverse across this like zip line kind of thing, except you go down to the middle and then you have to pull yourself the rest of the way across. It's 200 feet, and it's a pretty good workout. It's really fun and kind of nerve-wracking the first time, but you can't see the ground because you're upside down. And when you get over there, then you like can plug your phone and stuff, so like really whenever you want to get a charge on your phone or like have access to the outside world, you have to take the adventure and go across the traverse. And for me, the first time it was pretty scary, but I did it, and it was really fun. I like being up in the trees.
You all heard about the disaster in Japan, the tsunami, the earthquake, and the nuclear power plants blowing up in all four volcanoes. People in Japan near the nuclear power plants are being evacuated. Over 3,000 people have died, and over 10,000 people are missing. But our main concern is what mankind has done. The tsunami, the earthquake, the volcanoes are all natural, but the nuclear power plants aren't.
Why would the adults want to do this to us?
Did you hear President Obama's speech? He wants to go ahead with the nuclear power plant. Has he gone mad? Has he not learned from the oil spill? Has he not learned from others' mistakes? Has he not asked the children what we want? It seems like kids mean the world to you, but with issues like this, we're nothing. Mr. President, have you asked your daughters, do they want nuclear power? Do they want the risk of millions, including themselves, dying with cancer and too much radiation? Is this their fate? Is this our fate? Children of America, children of the world, we need to make a stand for our future, because the adults ruined it as far as I can see. All we have to say is no nuclear power, no offshore drilling, and please, consider your decisions when the accidents are irreversible. Adults, we have not inherited Earth from you. You are borrowing her from us. Please, give me the opportunity to leave a beautiful Earth for my children. Please, for your children.
We're listening to the Wildo family, and this is going to continue in progress, speaking with Cyan Thunder.
There you go.
That was actually Mahaya.
It really takes a lot of energy, actually. Like, climbing, you use every single muscle, and you wouldn't even think of some of those muscles that you use, but you're, like, totally sore, and you're totally, like, feasting on quinoa, usually, or, in, like, rice and beans and soup, stuff like that, and
cereal,
nuts. Bread. I like cashews.
Chocolate.
And granola. So do the squirrels.
Oh, yeah.
Flying squirrels are...
They ate our tofu.
Pretty amazing. They like tempeh, and they are ruthless. They will chew through plastic. They will cuddle with you, though. They like to... They'll run up your arm and sit on your shoulder. I've witnessed it. Oh, my gosh. But, you know, we're in their space, and the forest is being cut down, so it's just, I don't know, trying to coexist with one another. Not, like, domesticate them, but just be, I guess. And... Yeah, it's an amazing view. I like to honestly, like, climb in the full moon, like, because you can see totally, like, perfectly fine, and it's so beautiful, the ocean, and people have seen whales from the trees, and I don't know, it's just, it takes you out of your life and kind of gives you time to, like, look in from the outside, in a way. And, like, it also connects you with everything. So it's like praying becomes more amplified. They're like antennas, and they're connected with everything. And so, like, you're praying with everything when you pray. And, I don't know, you can totally feel the oneness out there. It's definitely a great experience. And
how long did it feel like you were up there?
Well, I'd like to intercept the interview with the song that Mahaya, who was just speaking, wrote. This went out on the YouTube. Here it is. Just free radio, 101.3, freakradio.org.
While the world is breaking and we empty our seas, while the shore's just no more waves of sorrow, can we all pray this night?
Mahaya, how long it felt like she'd been up in the tree. Here's what she's saying.
I was up there for like a week. It was like the longest time that I didn't touch the ground. But I don't know. It felt like a long time. I got down and my legs were kind of wobbly. I was using them and stuff up there, but the like swaying of the trees is it's kind of like you're on a boat, and when you get down, you're like, whoa, I'm not swaying anymore, but you keep swaying, and like it's cool. And when the wind blows, the trees dance and they sing. And there's, oh my gosh, one night there was four owls surrounding us, and we were just talking to them, and it was so amazing. We were just like singing to them with the drum, and like, oh my gosh, I just can't even explain. There's no really words to describe like the majesticness of it. I swear, like, it's pretty amazing. And just to like be able to, oh no, know you're doing something good and you're saving lives and protecting the future generation and all the little squirrels and deer and bears and all the redwoods, and they are totally connected, and if you cut one, they totally feel each other. And so logging of any sort is just not rational. It's not moral. It's like really inhumane, and you know, plants can feel, trees can definitely feel. Okay, I don't know.
Okay, he's been up there. There's...
Ow!
Sorry.
I'd like to know what someone else in the group that was up there, if it was after your sister did, or is it after your brother did? And
I'm Rising Moon, and the first time I went up there was after my brother and sister both went, and I went up there with my sister. It was pretty fun. I had fun with her, and we mostly just sat around talking and like spider clawing up the tree. And we would...
Can you explain what that is?
It's when you go above the rope where it's hooked up, and you have like...
rope is connected to
your harness
by...
They're like Spider-Man things, right?
Well, they're like it's one continuous rope. It's like 14 feet long. It's connected to your harness by two different points of safety, which are like, it's two loops, webbing loops, 1-inch webbing tied in a water knot, and then you have two steel links, one on each loop, and then that's connected to an individual prensic, which is adjustable, so you can like throw one end of the rope over a branch and hook it on itself with a steel carabiner, and you can adjust the prensic to like whatever length you need it to be, so you don't go anywhere, you don't fall. And that's how you climb around. You just keep doing the alternating spider claws and just move around slowly. Ish, slowish.
How long were you up?
I was up there for 4 or 5 days. And when I got down, it was like being on a boat for a while. You keep swaying and felt like so different. Like it was amazing.
Did your sister and brother train you to go, or some other people?
My sister did before. She was like a trainer, but...
Talk about that, how you trained over here.
First time I ever climbed, we had a rope up in our living room. I remember
the ceiling.
I remember I was afraid to climb up to the top, but
well, it's
I
like,
ended up.
How high is that? It's like,
I don't know,
16 feet.
I was afraid to climb that high, but then I ended up climbing like 130 feet or something. And then we set up ropes outside on big oak trees and a Doug fir and
pine.
Mm-hmm. And I climbed to the top of those ones.
Oh, and a cedar tree too.
Yeah, and that's when I learned how to climb. And then I went up.
Traversed on that little.
You also had other kind of training too. Talk about that.
Nonviolent direct action training.
We learned how to communicate with loggers if they like, if they're like yelling at us, and we keep calm in the way, and we don't want to hurt anyone, and like we don't want to hurt anything, and we keep it calm and nonviolent. And
how do you feel about that, Shah?
I don't know. I get frustrated a lot when I'm being yelled at, especially like straight to my face by loggers who are cutting down the forest.
What do they yell?
Some pretty nasty things. I've heard, like, not from personal experience, but I've heard, like, they would say, like, I'm gonna kill you, or like, you know, stuff like that. And they actually have tried to kill people in
they
trees.
They have killed people in Gypsy.
Like, I knew a person who cut down a tree with tree sitters in it, and they were okay, but they had to jump out like 30 feet above the ground, and he didn't care about them. He just wanted his income. So, being nonviolent is it's definitely something you have to practice. It's something that everyone needs, especially in this world today. Okay.
Did that happen to you, Rising Moon? Did anybody yell?
No. Mm. But, like...
It's pretty calm at the tree sit. It's, like, kind of like a training ground. It's really calm, and, the timber company actually said that they were going to give the land 27 acres around this rock to the land and the community, or not to the, yeah, the community and the people, and it's not in paper yet, but they have said that, and I'm pretty sure it's not just documented and signed, it's just not official, you know, I don't know, but, so...
We heard a lot of the kids talking, the brothers and sisters.
In a world of convenience stores, megaplexes, and electronic commerce, modern society's relationship with the air, land, and water, vital to our very survival, often seems removed and intangible. But for many Native American cultures, the natural world is still held in reverence and recognized as integral to their very being. Even in today's changing world, these cultures routinely depend on the earth to provide subsistence for their families, creating a more personal relationship with nature, one based on respect and balanced on faith. For the Yurok tribe of California, this balance resonates back for countless generations. Unlike many other tribes, the Yurok were never forced to relocate from much of their native territory and still inhabit the homeland of their ancestors. Along California's northern coast and upstream from the mouth of the state's second largest river, the Klamath.
The Klamath Klamath River is extremely important to the Yurok people, as we are a fishing tribe, and we depend very heavily on the resources of the river, including spring and fall chinook, steelhead, sturgeon. As a people, we depend on the Klamath River not only for a food source, but for spiritual well-being, and it's extremely important to us as a people for both of those reasons.
And now we're going to hear about clear cutting.
Concerned about my mountain. I mean, I call myself Keeper of the Mountain. That's what I'm known by, and part of that is just really loving, having a love for the mountains. And here's a good part of the reason why I love the mountains. I mean, look at the surroundings here. Isn't this beautiful? This is a vista from a logging platform, or a landing, they call it, where when they cut the trees, they drag them all to a central location where they can load them on a truck and then haul them out of the woods. Now, logging raises a lot of concerns with a lot of people. You know, they're about deforestation and the tearing apart of the landscape, etc., etc. And some people have compared it to, say, raping the land. But what really is going on when logging happens? Now, there's a lot of discussion about clear cuts and you know, whether or not they're really something that should happen or not, and how they should be done, and distances from creeks and all that sort of thing. However, let's take a look at a little bit of evidence here. In the good old days, we'll say, let's call them that, the good old days, back in pre-1900 era, everything was old growth because nobody had gotten here to cut anything down. And so when they got here, there was just a few trees per acre, maybe 10 or 20 trees per acre maximum, because the trees were so enormous. And it really contributed to a lack of diversity in forest. And there was animals, there was a balance, it was going along okay. But there was a lot of critters that really struggled because there just wasn't enough food for them out there. So they moved on to other areas. Well, once the logging began, things changed. And take a look over here, right here in this area. And you'll see that line where the one group of trees begins and the other ends right there in the middle. It'd be like right there. See those trees? Where those are big trees and then there's little trees here. And then if you look right down here, you'll see where the trees are really small. Now, what is the significance of that? Well, you see, one thing that happens when an area is clear cut like this here, well, all of this has at one point been clear cut, is they replant. And people say, well, the problem with replanting is that there's lack of diversity now because they always plant just one kind of tree, whatever the cash crop is. Well, I'd like to draw your attention to take a close look up here at this area right here that was replanted. This is probably a 10 years old replant. Look at those woods. Does that look like all one kind of tree? No, it's not. There's a whole variety. Is it just that one little spot? No. Let's take a look over here. We turn around right here. And now let's look at this area. Look at that. That, my friends, is diversity. Biodiversity. Now, there's a couple things that you can learn from that. One, you have the biodiversity so that there's a lot of different things for the different animals to do, and that's a good thing. And also, you have forests of every age. You have everything from this brand new forest right here, that's these trees over here that you see are probably about 3 years old. They're not very big. And then over here in this valley, they're probably about 6 or 7 years old. And right up above them up there, probably about 10, 15 years old. And it carries on this way all around. You have groves of different ages of forests. And what that does is gives you a diversity of habitat, because different kind of animals are attracted to different kinds of habitat and different ages of forest. So you end up with more animals, more diversity in animals, and then you still have down in the valley down here, if you look closely in the valley, you'll see there is also room for humans to do some farming. Well, here's an example of a clear cut. This is a clear cut from last year. All the trees have been cut down and hauled off and logged away, and it all looks really barren, but not really. Because if you look closely at the ground, you will see all kinds of plant life beginning to spring up out of the ground. Another thing you're going to see is little trees like this one. They're planted all over this land. This is what's done. I mean, everywhere you look, you can see another one. Here's another one right here. Yep, that's what it looks like right at the beginning stages of a clear-cut recovery. You look over here, you see more trees. Everywhere you look, there's little trees. And there are different kinds of trees. And here in about 45, 50 years, this too will be able to be logged again. And during that entire time, this will change from one kind of habitat to another, and there'll be lots of animals. And there's, it may not seem like it, but there's a lot of animals here. Right along that tree line over there, during the day, the deer hide back in that tree line, and then in the evening and the morning, they come out into the edge of the clearing and eat, because this is where their food is, that's where their protection is. So if you're ever hunting in the mountains, always be along a tree line, because that's where you're going to find them. But when people tell you that all loggers do is cut down trees and rape and pillage a non-renewable resource, you're looking at it right here. These are crops that have about a 50-year turnaround. Big difference between this and corn, say, for example. You plant it in the spring, you harvest it in the fall. Well, spring and fall in tree years is about 50 years when it comes to commercial growing. Most of this land has been cut 3, 4, sometimes up to 5 times since logging began back in the late 1800s. So really, you're not looking at a resource that's being squandered or wasted. You're looking at one that's being managed and grown like any other crop. And that's why you can still go to the lumber yard and buy lumber. Because if we never replanted, it would all be gone today. Man, this is beautiful. I love my mountains. Look at this beauty. It's just breathtaking. It's probably 75 degrees where I'm standing, and look up here on this mountaintop. They still have glaciers and ice and snow. What a beautiful day. Thanks for coming along, and thanks for sharing my mountain with me.
Yep. 20 seconds and counting. We're going to continue the rest of the youth interviews.
12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Yeah. Me. Get me up on this bright blue day. I got something
take
to
this.
Say.
This one's got four colors.
It's a small world.
We're living in one small world.
It's a small world.
It's all one.
It's a small world.
We're living in one small world.
It's a small world.
It's all one.
It's a small world.
And
oh yeah, the second year that we went to Monsanto, and
this year at the Capitol.
And then the last year we went at the Capitol, we said. More speeches.
We all did. Four
more speeches. So for the past 3 years, we've been going against Monsanto pretty hard.
GMO.
The main corporation that makes GMOs and, well, GMOs are genetically modified organisms that go in our food, and they put them in pretty much all of our food and like basically everything you eat, unless it says organic on the box or the bag.
Not even that anymore.
Not even that. Sometimes there's still GMOs. It's in everything. And the lab rats that have been tested with GMOs have giant, grotesque tumors on their face that are like half the size of their body. In three generations, the rats are sterile completely and they cannot reproduce. So I don't know what people are thinking with letting all that stuff in their food.
They don't even eat it.
Like, it's ridiculous.
That's just
stupid that we would even eat something, that we would even go there. And, like, not a lot of people know about this, which is why we're trying to wake a lot of people up, but it's sad that people are blind, like, to know, or blind that, and I think that McDonald's is their food. McDonald's is healthy for them.
Well, just anyway, any fast food restaurant, like
Coca-Cola.
So, you were also
what?
You were also in that GMO commercial, or that.
Oh yeah, there was
labeling
a
law.
There was a GMO commercial about the labeling law. And me and my little sister Rise and my little brother Aaron went down to Sacramento to do that. A short little commercial with two other families, I think. And I don't know how that turned out, but
it turned out great.
It did? Yeah, it turned out great, I guess.
Small World Radio, what about that?
Well, Small World Radio, I mean, if you listen to us, you know what we're doing. We're on everything.
Everything you can think of.
Board of Forestry.
We're talking to the Board of Forestry. I've spoken to the Board of Forestry multiple times. We've protested chemtrails. We've protested HAARP. We've protested 9/11. The Japanese whaling.
Last week, we protested the slaughtering of the dolphins in Taiji for 2 days in a row at the Council of
Japan. Tell about that.
We went to San Francisco and the first day, September 1st, which was the day that they start the slaughter in Taiji, but actually in Taiji it's a day before because the time change or whatever difference, so it actually started before, but I heard that they haven't gotten any dolphins.
Blue days, yeah.
Yeah, they haven't gotten any dolphins yet, and it's, what, September, what is it?
Fifth, sixth.
So it's 6 days that they failed. And
what was that like? What did you do?
We went to the wharf, the fisherman's wharf, and we protested. It was about 60 to 70 of us. And I don't know, we just spread the word, spread the message.
touch people's hearts, tried to at least. A lot of people were, it was kind of sad. A lot of people were like zombies. A lot of people.
The next day.
No, even before I noticed people, some people just don't care. I don't know what it is. Well, they hate themselves or they hate their jobs. They hate what they're doing. I don't know what it is exactly, but they just are not happy. And they don't care about other beings besides themselves. So that was kind of sad to see. And like, it was kind of a realization to me. And then the next day after that, it was just our family and Coral here. It was just six people. Right? Or no, five. It was just me, my brother, my littlest brother, my mom, my dad, and Coral. We were here down at the consulate in Japan in front of their building and
in San Francisco.
And we had a bunch of signs, way more signs. Spent like a week making signs. And there was way more signs than people. And we were just on the sidewalks, you know, like singing and, you know, crying and trying to get people's attention and to open their hearts. And, you know, we got a lot of information out, and we, you know, we'd ask people to raise their hands if they wanted dolphins for the next generations, for their grandchildren, and whole intersections, you know, and with a megaphone. We were like asking, we got everyone's attention. They couldn't really not hear us unless they were listening to an iPod or something, but we would ask them if, you know, who wants dolphins and whales for your, yeah, raise your hand if you want dolphins or whales for your grandchildren or your future generations or whatever. And a lot of people, most people didn't do anything, you know, like one time nobody did anything. No one raised their hand. I was like, wait, what? And I was just like asking people, and they're like, I don't know, not really asking people, just like saying out loud, really loud, like, there's humans everywhere, but there's no humanity. Like, it's kind of like a dead, it's weird, it's really scary, honestly. Like, as I think about the hope of the future, like, what?
They're just a bunch of zombies, yeah.
I've said that like twice.
Yeah.
What? You don't want to talk? You were there. Little guy.
What were you doing? She already told the whole thing.
He was singing with me.
But yeah, you were handing out papers, yeah?
Yeah. I handed out about 200 papers, maybe. And we also, like, we had about 40 signs at least. People were walking by, not even caring. A lot of the Japanese people said thank you.
Yeah, they did. Mhm.
And
prayer ties.
Yeah, we made prayer ties in the parking lot. Then I climbed as far as I could up a tree, and we tied them. Mm.
Did you know where the Japanese consulate was?
No.
On Battery Street or something? I don't know. 275.
Got the numbers right. The Japanese consulate is on 275 Battery Street.
How close were you?
I wasn't there, but how close were you, Arin?
We were right in front of it.
I was leaning on the building.
Mm.
Talk about
leaning that. On the building. I don't know. The security at first, they like tried to lock the doors, and I was like, wait a minute, it's not like I'm gonna lock my neck to your door, okay? Like, I was thinking about it, okay? I swear. But I didn't do it, and
oh yeah,
they unlocked the door.
That's how you got arrested.
How I got arrested. Oh, okay. Okay, so I was 16 at the time. It was October 16th in John Day, Oregon. It was like 20 degrees, maybe less, and freezing. And
it's like 12 hours from home.
Yeah, it's really far away. And it was snowing like mad. It was really cold. And the megalode, the tar sands megalode, some like water refinery distillation machine that wouldn't even work. It's like you can't take tar sludge water and make something good out of it. It just doesn't work. It's just waste of space and whatever. But so it was going, this megalode. Was it the first one?
Yes, it was.
It was the first megalode that was going out of three megalodes.
And it had already been attacked 7 times.
It had been attacked 7 times, or, you know, peacefully attacked, whatever. 7 times. And so it went through Umatilla. I don't know how to pronounce it really.
The port of Umatilla.
The port of Umatilla, which is native land, and they didn't have the permission of the tribe to go through there, and so I met a grandmother who laid down right in front of the megalode, and they arrested her, and they strip-searched her, and they treated her really badly. They put her in jail in chains, and, you know, her granddaughter, they pushed her down, and, or no, her daughter, they pushed her down. It was her daughter. They pushed her down, and that she had to go to the hospital because her ankle was all messed up, and the cops just totally brutalized them, and they're just defending what's left of the land that they, like, took, you know. It's horrible. So they were just calling for help, and we just went up there, you know, because, you know, you can't not say no. If they call for help, you gotta go. So we went, and and there was 16 of us, at least in that part of the arrest, and there was like another 5 people somewhere else in the town, and they locked down to a car, and there was a hole in the bottom of the car, and somebody was like under the car, and they were locked down like that together. So someone was in the car, and one person was laying under the car, and they were both locked together, like in the middle, you know, through the floor of the car. And that was called Snowball. And so they deployed Snowball. The cops got him out in like, what, 5 minutes? It was really sad. And so we were like, okay, so we have to deploy now. We had a trailer.
Be careful about what you put on the radio.
Oh, yeah. So we're just going to get taken out.
There's been convictions, so, yeah.
Okay, well, we had this...
Stay with the story.
This trailer, and it had a barrel on it, you know, and it was a lockdown device. And 2 ladies were locked down to it, and the cops used pain compliance to get them to move. I wasn't there when they were removed. I actually don't know what happened after I got arrested for stating my rights. And I was standing on the white line, behind the white line of the road. They said, get off the road, and there's a drop-off behind me. And so, like, I back up to the ledge, and they say, everyone's under arrest. And I was like, wait, what? We're just demonstrating, like, we're just standing here witnessing, really, what you're about to do to these people locked down. We're just here. And they arrested my dad and, like, charged him with a bunch of crazy charges. Like, they charged him with being in the lockdown, but he was over, like, 300 yards away with, and he was recording an officer, and he got charged with, interception of communications. Made him sound like a total terrorist. Made us sound all like terrorists. Oh, yeah, because we're eco-terrorists or whatever. Totally, I was reading this book, Know Your Rights, and we're totally classified as eco-terrorists. Even if you care about the environment, you're like a terrorist, so watch out. And so, you know, I got arrested. They told me to sit on the ground, so I complied with everything that they said, and I was just kind of telling them, like, what you're doing is illegal, like, we're not doing anything wrong, and we have the right to be here. This is a public road. And they ordered to get heavier shackles for me, and they put me in the back of a car, the sheriff's car, and handcuffed, of course, and they...
So you never got the heavy
shackles? No, I didn't. Some lady, she was shorter than me, and they shackled her instead, because they thought that I was her, or she was me, or whatever, but I was already in the back of a car, and they shackled her, and I was like, oh my god, that is so crazy, like, ankle shackles that were connected, and, like,
wrist shackles. I was like, no way were they gonna put me in that. And but that was before they knew I was a minor. And I honestly think I should have kept my mouth shut until I got to the jail. I think I should have not said I was a minor, because I told them I was a minor, like, I think right before they put me in the car after they handcuffed me. And I told them there was two male cops who were patting me down and trying to, like, pull stuff out of my pockets or whatever. But I was, like, telling them, I was like, I have a knife there. Like, I don't know what else I had. It was probably nothing. And they searched me. Two different guys, which is weird, unacceptable, I think. And I told them, I was like, I'm a female. But I had, like, a face mask and a bandana on because it was really cold, and they put me in the car and the heater was on full blast, and so I was like dying of heat. I was in this heavy jacket, layers, like five layers, like two layers of wool, like three layers of leggings. I swear to God, it was so hot. And it was so bad. I just remember, like, no one was paying attention to me, and I was, like, screaming, but no one could hear me, and so I had to hit my head on the window to get attention, so they could, like, let me, like, take my mask off to breathe. And when they saw my face, it was, like, a look of shock, like, oh, my God.
Oh, my God, you went through that. I'm so sorry.
They were, like, oh, my God, like, you're a, you know, not crazy-looking person. Like, I don't think, you know, look like a girl. And they were like, oh my God, like, what did we do? And then, but even after my face mask was off, the sheriff said, he's like, I hope you get tar sand in your eyes. And I was like, really now? Oh, my phone's ringing.
That wasn't the deputy, that was the sheriff.
That was the sheriff, the old gray haired sheriff. He was mean. Whatever. I was like, God bless you, and that was it. And the ladies were just really nice. When I got to the juvie place, they drove me like an hour and a half to halfway of where I was going. They released me to a friend, not even a parent, guardian, or whatever, because they mistreated me so bad. They just let me go and drop my charge of, like, civil disobedience or disorderly conduct. I can't remember anymore.
So how did all that end up, the whole thing?
They dropped every single charge after everyone was kept in jail for 3 days, except me.
Except for four people.
Except for four people. They got charges and are facing those charges.
Disorderly conduct.
I think it's just community service or whatever. But it's all good. I mean, we have a great attorney, Lauren Reagan, CLDC, Civil Liberty Defense Fund.
Center.
My bad. Civil Liberty Defense Center. And they're amazing. We just went to a youth climate justice active. Yeah. Jeez. Climate. Oh, what is it?
Youth
climate justice action camp. Sounds somewhat right. But it was the first year, and I got asked to be a youth organizer for next year. I'm super excited. But it was really great. Like, we learned more about our rights and, you know, media outreach and...
Run by lawyers, right?
Yeah, by lawyers and attorneys and, you know, people within different organizations who are saving the earth, like the Ruckus Society. Yeah, Shy and I went, or Sun Thunder.
How was it?
It was pretty cool. It was two nights that we spent the night, and we learned how to screen print, you know, like making your own shirts and stuff, and learned about social movements and their history and like different tactics. We did a mock action. I learned a lot. Met a lot of cool kids, and really gave me hope, you know, like this generation, we're pretty awesome. So I think if we all like pulled together and just like, you know, stood up and like stood in front of these bulldozers, or like we all went to court over like the children's public trust, like we could definitely make a change.
We just need to do something. Stop going to school, public school.
Tell me about real. ELA, too.
ELA, this was an environmental law school up in Oregon. It has a conference every year, and it's like 2-3 days long, and it's very informational, and there's just so many different workshops and so many different campaigns going on. It's just, God,
Jim Hansen was there.
We just gotta have like so many people to be in so many different places and so many people to care to make it all work. But it's pretty amazing. Gives me a lot of hope that I, you know, that school is just so amazing. It's just all about like environmental justice and, you know, stuff like that, climate justice and stuff. It's great. And if I was to study anywhere, go to college, I'd go there. Pretty sure, because, yeah.
I think Raz wants to talk about Occupy.
Oh, yeah.
Occupy Oakland.
Yeah. How old were you?
I was...
Six?
No.
No.
Eight or nine.
Yeah.
That was my first, real occupation, and there was a lot of people there, but, we got up at 5 a.m, we parked, that night, and then in the morning we got up, and we drove the bus down to the port, and, the cops there had tear gas and they were ready to I don't know,
bash heads.
Yeah. And they had their they had full gear on, like shin pads, elbow pads,
even the tops of their feet.
Yeah,
like pads.
And I was the only kid there. I was really, really young.
You had a press pass, huh?
Yeah, I had a press pass, and my dad introduced me to the cops, and my dad, he's like, Rising Moon, these are the police, and they are here to serve and protect you, and they are all geared up, and I was pretty nervous because they had guns and tear gas and and they're beating sticks, and I was scared, but they ended up leaving. They were all waving to me. They left in the buses 10 minutes later after my dad introduced them to me, and it ended up being a peaceful day, and we shut down the port for that day. And I had a great experience. It was really cool.
And then, it was an exciting time, wasn't
yeah.
it?
And then I started doing it way more after that. Monsanto and clear cutting, Board of Forestry, chemtrailing. I remember one time they kept us in this small box, and we had to only speak there, and we couldn't get any closer to the building, the Board of Forestry.
Right.
There's only a few people there, actually, but they kept us in a small box, taped around,
That was the loggers' conference in Anderson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they did that
Did they do that at the Board of Forestry?
They had it roped off, our freedom of speech.
Oh, yeah. What was that called? Free speech zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think about your future, your life? What do you want to do?
I want to be an activist, I don't know, I just want to be part of everything. I want to help save the environment for future generation, for my children, their children. I want to save the world. We're part of everything. We get invited to so many different things. It's crazy, I just love doing this. I love my family. It couldn't be better.
Mm-hmm. This is inspiration to a lot of families. So it's really good that you talked, and I'm glad all of you were here to do it together. It's Small World Radio group. And I'm going to put down where that you could get more information just so I make sure it's all correct. And is anyone last word, any of you want to shout or say?
Well,
I'm glad to be here.
I would like to encourage people to donate directly to Soul and help keep this family doing what we're doing. I mean, we put all our money, we put all our money, spare money into our activism. We basically, if we don't have the donations to do something, we pay for it, and that's most of the time. And we would like to keep these kids out there. And so donating directly to Souls is a good thing, and that's box 225, Montgomery Creek, 96065. And I think this is the first time I've ever asked for that in 15 years for Soul. But it's really important to me to keep my four children in, with their hand in their future.
Thank you very much for being here. And I'm especially glad to talk and hear from you. I'm saying bye for now. Anyone else want to say bye?
Bye.
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 Two of them left already.
Yeah. So thanks for tuning in.
This is a record for kids who like to, you know what I mean? Yeah, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm.